Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to another special bonus edition of the Paul Ryder Tapes. I'm Paul's ex-wife, Angela Smith, who Paul sat down with to tell his complete life story just before his untimely death. I then interviewed more than 40 people to get their perspective on his life, snippets of which were used in the main series. These bonus episodes are those interviews in full for those of you who want all of the details. We've been saving this week's one because it's just so good. He doesn't usually do interviews, and loads of people were surprised at how brilliantly funny he came across in the main series. So lots of you have been asking for this one. It's the ace guitarist, the nimble-fingered string strummer who plays music across the spectrum with his plectrum. Ladies and gents, it's the incredibly talented and beautiful human that is Monday's guitarist, Mark Day.
Take me back to the very first day and you were approached to play music with Paul and Sean. Can you remember the first time there was ever an inkling that something might be about to happen? Like you're just being asked to join a band. Can you remember that day?
The first time I got involved with Paul and Sean was when I met his dad at the post office in Farnworth. And they used to come in at 5 o'clock in the morning. That was the start time. It was only a small office of about 20 blokes. And they had makeup on, eyeliner, because they'd just done all the comedy duo acts around Lancashire and stuff. And I was always reading the Sounds Melody Maker and stuff. And I got talking to Barry, who was Derek's compatriot in the older comedy thing, whatever they did. And we just started talking about music. And then he happened to mention that Derek's sons were looking for a guitarist. And invited me down to have an audition in a way. And it was at Clifton Drive in a bungalow. I think it was Paul's grandma's. I'm not sure. Yeah, on Clifton Drive somewhere. And I turned up in a Queen T-shirt. Obviously, I was still in the prog rock era. I was still trying to learn guitar. As a guitarist, you learn guitar music. And they were dressed in Perry Boys and all sorts. I thought, oh, look at this. This is different. And then I've met them. Totally from different music ends of spectrums, because I was listening to, I had a Queen T-shirt, I've just been to see them, love Brian May's guitar work, and I was into bands, Zappa, Zeppelin, you know, I was into all that, and they were totally from a different other end of the spectrum of music, which they introduced me to. I did a cover version, I think it was a Joy Division radio live transmission.
Right.
I'm not very good on that. I mean, Gaz will know better than me. And Paul was brilliant because he had an excellent memory for stuff like this. I might be wrong, but I think radio. It was two chords to me, which was like, oh, that's easy. I turned up with my brand new guitar case and brand new guitar that I just bought. I was so proud of. So yeah, and then I think Matt was there as well, actually. And he had his guitar in a placky bag or something, which was like... I just went from there, really. And obviously they liked, Sean and Paul liked, you know, it worked, it gelled. Derek was there doing all, Derek Paul's dad was doing all the sound and stuff and the mixing desk stuff, yeah. And that was the first one. And then the second, then we just started, where did we rehearse now?
You rehearsed it was in your mum and dad's loft, apparently.
Yeah, well, it was desperate. And I was very surprised that my mum and dad said, yes, you can use the loft, which had been converted because it was our kids'. But we had to be separated. I was a blue, he was a red. He was a mod, I was a rocker. We didn't get on. And we had a little two up, two down, and there was a line. You cross it, and it's a fight. So my dad converted the loft and got Sean and Paul. We just started rehearsing up there with a drum machine and just learning cover versions, like some Clash, some Punk, some all sorts, just to get used to how it works with the sort of set up a verse melody. And then Gaz came along. And that was good because we had drums in the loft. So the whole street could hear us banging away there. Everybody thought, what the hell's going on? Because if you're in the loft, it's like being outside.
So Matt was trying to play the guitar, I believe. Is that right? But was having trouble. Do you remember?
Yeah. No, he was into the cramps and stuff like that. And it was total another end of the spectrum, which is not my... It's nice, great, but it wasn't my thing. Yeah, and he was learning as well. So I was trying to coach him at the same time as well as get everybody to play with the drum beat because we was all learning. We were all naive. We didn't know what we were doing. We just persisted and kept doing what we had to do. And it was just trying to get Paul and Gaz. Well, it was me, Sean and Paul at first, and we just was going, just getting using a drum machine, just getting to play in time with the drum machine and then try and form. Sean was a bit shy at singing, so I tried to do a bit. But I can't sing. I can't write. I'm not going to admit that. My lyrics were terrible, but I tried to do something just to get them going, and it was an experience.
Have you got any tapes of that time?
I have.
Have you? Would you be willing to share a little bit?
Well, if you was here, I would have shown you, because it's all in the shed.
Really?
I've got a big box.
Really? Have you? What, of
a
tapes?
A big box.
Of tapes?
Tapes, diaries that I used to keep, all the magazines... Just a lot. I did give a few away, which I was a bit upset about. I never got them back. Some projects I got involved in. But they were on magazines, all the interviews. I kept everything. All the paper cuttings, all the tapes. All the... I've still got them somewhere. And I've even got the tape machine, the most sacred of all technical advancements, the tape machine that used to tape everything we did on a cassette. Now, a lot of people probably don't know what I'm talking about, but it was the only thing we had because we were high-tech in them days. There's a joke there. I've still got that, and that's a relic. That should be in a museum.
Was it like a cassette machine with a plug-in microphone?
And you put the cassette in the top, and we used to record everything on that, but the sound was terrible. But yeah. It was the only way we'd record it and then listen back a week later. And it was like, what were we playing there? Because the quality was crap.
But were you called avant-garde originally?
Oh, we tried using avant-garde. I don't know, that's a bit... We were just sat in the pub in the Morning Star trying to come up with names. And I think avant-garde was one of them. No, first of all, it was Something in the Attic. And then avant-garde. It was just an aim, but...
That sounds very 80s, the Something in the Attic.
Very, yeah.
What did your mum and dad think when you were in the loft?
I haven't got a clue. They must have thought, what? I mean, I think what it was because I was a new kid in the area because we moved from Failsworth straight across town to Swinton. I had no mates, gone to a new school. They felt probably a bit sorry for me. And I think it was just like a sympathy vote. I'll ask my dad. He's still around. I'll ask him, see what he thinks. But I'm sure he couldn't hear the TV. And I'm sure we were limited to a certain time of 2 hours, so I think that was enough.
What were your ambitions at the time? Did you have any idea that you would end up actually becoming really successful? Or was it just something that you were doing for a bit of fun and to make some friends?
Yeah, it was just a bit of fun, make some friends, try and get a girlfriend, something like that. Yeah, I didn't imagine to go where we got, you know, on that roller coaster of whatever it was we went on. But yeah, it was nice to just get people come round and just play some music. I never had any ambitions whatsoever. Just lucky, I suppose.
What did you make of Sean and Paul in those days?
Well, they're just brothers, weren't they? They would argue and bicker over minor things. I mean, I had to referee quite a few times. It was quite funny one time when there was some argument. I don't know what it was about, but it ended up in the ginnel at the back there. They both took the tops off, fisticuffs. I was reffing, and then they put them back on, went back to rehearse again. Rock and roll, yeah. Didn't want to ruin the best tops, but they'd have a bit of a fight, a bit of a punch, get it out there, and then that was it. Just brothers.
Okay, so things progressed, and Paul sent out a load of demos, and somebody from London Records, I believe, came to see you, and you'd progressed to rehearsing in a school.
Yeah, All Saints across the road. We knew the care. My mum and dad knew the caretaker next door. They agreed as well. I thought we had to pay a fiver for the electricity. Well, could I get a pound off each of them? So only on 30 quid a week. Fiver was a lot of money in them days. We ended up at All Saints School. We got this A&R guy came round and started playing. He was watching. Next thing, kids are throwing bricks at the window, smashing. I mean, before drugs and everything, I was more of a beer monster, and they disappeared. And I wondered why they're coming back happy. What are they doing? I'm smoking weed, weren't they? Didn't tell me about it. And then bricks coming through, and I think we got a knockback saying they didn't like the fashion or something like that. We're a bit, you know.
Yeah, that you didn't have an image, you didn't have a look.
We didn't have an image. Yeah. Well, just goes to show you what they know.
So tell me about the Battle of the Bands competition at the Hacienda.
What, in Blackpool?
Was it in Blackpool? No, wasn't it at the Hacienda? Yeah. Was it in Blackpool?
Oh, that's another one. Oh,
tell me about the Blackpool one. I don't know anything about that.
Dancing Shoes won it. There was a band called Dancing Shoes. I think we came last. We all went down there. And starving, coming back, nearly got run over, trying to get some fast food from some shop. Yeah, it was a competition that Derek found out about, and we just went and did it just for a bit of experience, really. Because before that, we didn't have many. It was like one gig a year, I think. We did the Wardle Community Centre, which was probably the most nerve-wracking experience I've ever had, because it's all your family and friends and all your mates. And they were all. The lights were on, bright as anything, and everybody stood around the wall, right? The rest of the band coming giggling again, obviously been out for a smoke, and I'm going, what's going on here again? So, yeah, that was the only time I got over the fear of playing in front of an audience. It was the worst time ever. Well, once you do one, it gets easier after that.
So how did the nerves play out with you? What did it mean for you? How were you nervous? What did it mean for your body?
I think why we did drugs is to get over the nerves. Because, I know Paul was very nervous. It was just a way of, I couldn't give a fuck, let's get pissed, stoned, whatever, and just play and just enjoy ourselves. Don't care what them lot think out there. And they saw that. Everybody saw that we were just enjoying ourselves, and we really didn't. Well, if it ends tomorrow, we'll just go out for a blast, you know what I mean? But, yeah, it's to calm your nerves, basically. It's like everything, you do one. The worst one is your family and friends. They're the biggest critics. After that, it doesn't matter.
Right. So you were particularly nervous because you knew the people in the audience.
Yeah. Well, and you could see their eyeballs.
Do you get nervous now when you play?
No.
Not at all?
No.
Even to 20,000 people walking
in? No.
Out? Really?
Don't faze me. Don't care anymore. I'm too old. Too old to care.
Is that because you're supremely confident that you're not going to make any mistakes? Like,
yes.
Yeah.
Do my homework.
Yeah.
It's all about homework. You get your homework right. I mean, apart from Bez buzzing about and tripping over my wires and causing mayhem, apart from that, I've nothing to worry about.
Right.
I'll probably get an electrocuted because of a storm. Abductions, all sorts of things go on when there's a gig.
Yeah. Didn't something really bad or dangerous happen once in Barcelona?
Like, oh, yeah, the stairs collapsed. Yeah, it was a bull ring.
Tell me about that, because we didn't even go there with Paul, because I completely forgot about that incident. So can you just tell us that story? Like, when was it, roughly? Can you remember?
It was in Spain. We was doing some video and a gig at a bull ring. There was bulls underneath the arena, because that's where they did the bull thing, I don't know. And they set the stage up, and I don't know if Derek was very lucky, because he got the lighting rig fell down, the whole stage collapsed because of the weight. Was we around? We might have been. Can't remember. It's one of those, did that really happen, or was it just a bad nightmare?
But you could have all been goners if you'd been on the stage at that
Yeah,
stage.
So it was, yeah. Good thing, really. It did it before we went on. There was no health and safety then.
So your first record was produced, I believe, by Mike Pickering, the first single.
If you say so, yeah. I mean, yeah. Recording is... we all did it separately. Well, at the beginning, we did it together. We put a live track down, and then whatever wasn't working, we'd replace with something else. If the drums weren't in time, or the bass, or something, or the guitar, we'd all... So sometimes, I don't know, recording, I can't remember, because I'd be in my own zone then.
What was it like going into the studio for the very first time to record something?
It was buzzing, it was excited, but this is where you find how it's very magnified in what you're doing. You've got to play in time, it's got to hit the mark. And we were just... I know we give Martin Hanna a bad... He was going off his head half the time. He'd just wake up in the middle of the night. Right, let's do some recording. There's so many albums, recording sessions we've done that it all just goes into one madness.
Do you remember how you felt when your first single was released and available to buy in the shops?
Yeah, yeah. It was... I thought, wow, this is good. Yeah. What was it? Was it The Egg? See, this is where Paul was great. He'd know this. I'm just useless. I'd have to have it.
It was delightful. It was
delightful. And then, yes. Well, it was great listening, hearing it on John Peel when he first played it. And then when we went down to do a John Peel session, that was really good.
Again, that's something that me and Paul didn't talk about when you first went on the John Peel show.
Well, we never actually saw John Peel. We saw his engineer. And it was one of those, right, let's go to London, do a John Peel session. So I went down there, but I'd been playing football because I was still in that silly era of I want to be a footballer rather than a musician. So 2 weeks before, I was playing a football match and I dislocated my shoulder. So I turned up with my arm in a sling. So the engineer says, oh, you're not the bloody drummer. No, you're all right, guitarist. I can just about do it. And that was daunting. That was good. I think we did it a live version, so we just played it live. So yeah, that was great to hear it on the radio on John Peel, because that's what everybody used to listen to.
So you got signed eventually to Factory. Tony Wilson, what was it like being part of that whole scene and set up with Tony?
Well, I don't know. I was just starstruck. Just like being a, you know, boardwalk and seeing him on telly. And what really impressed me, turns up and rolls a spliff. We'd all run out of our drugs and he turns up and starts skinning up. Brilliant. Yeah, go on, Tony. And then he would, because he talks in a different sort of, his different background, he's educated, went to Cambridge Uni, whatever, and he was talking else, and he'd just be like, whoa, you just sit there and listen to what's coming in. It was great. He's a lovely man, brilliant character. You just sit and listen to him. And he loved us. If it wasn't for Tony, we wouldn't be anywhere. He believed in us, which was nice. Yeah, fond memories of Tony.
Yeah, and he let you really have control, artistic control, didn't he?
Oh, Tony? Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure Paul's told you about that. He was well into all that... business side of it. Well, I just want to just get the job done so I can go home.
What's the most memorable gig that you've played? Like, is there one that sticks in your mind as being particularly mind-blowing for you?
I was probably... It'd probably have to be in Brazil. because we were put on last because of some technical error, because there was a thunderstorm. And I think you got Guns N' Roses, you got Wham, and you got Piers Morgan on the plane, and he was watching us, and we did this gig, and then it pissed down, didn't it? Typical Manchester weather, and there was 150,000 people in the pissing rain. And then they all started leaving, and all of a sudden, they all started coming back, and it was, they were getting into it. It was like, at first, they didn't, oh, who's this lot? Never heard of him before. They start leaving, then they started coming back because they saw what was going on, and it was a real fantastic gig. And yeah, it was just, I think it was just the size, and but it never fazed me. It was just one of those. But we have done some really weird gigs as well. I don't know if Paul's told you about China. Well, that was another one, 150,000, 200,000 people in a field in the middle of nowhere. And we had 7 amps, none of them worked. The equipment was crap. And I don't, as soon as we started playing, everybody buggered off. So there's one end of the spectrum and there's another end of the spectrum, but you live and learn, don't you?
Where was that? I didn't even know you'd China.
Well, yeah, China. And then we got offered, because you don't understand what the food is, because it's in Chinese. We were starving. I never went for a Chinese meal there because I couldn't understand what I was fucking eating. There was a McDonald's next to it. All I had was McDonald's for 3 days because I didn't understand what the food was. I didn't want to take a chance. I might be eating, like, you know, cat, dog, or whatever. So we had this, the promoter said, oh, we got burgers. Do you want a burger? Yeah, brilliant. Didn't find out till the next day it was horse meat. They think burger is just meat. Don't matter what it is. It's horrible. And we all went, we went past the Chinese wall, that, you know, the big wall of China thing, only because a plane had crashed on the other motorway, so we had to go the long way around, which was like, took us past the Chinese wall. We went to this bloody hotel that was falling to pieces. It's one of those you turn the tap on and the TV comes on. It was flooded on the floor. The breakfast, I'm not even going to start with the breakfast. It wasn't, you know, they thought English. Egg and bacon. What the hell's that? But you had to eat it because there was nothing else to eat.
So let's go back to Bummed. What was it like recording with Martin Hannett? You must have some stories about that.
He was the one. Yeah, crazy. Madness. Used to just go on inspiration, getting up. Odd hours. Was it Driftfield? Do you mean Driftfield? Yeah. Oh, fucking hell. Yeah. They put me in the drum booth, right? That was where we were sleeping, in a fucking drum booth. No air, nothing. It might have been soundproof, but it was fucking hot. You couldn't breathe. Party all the time. Don't know. I don't know how we got through that one, to tell you the truth. Yeah.
What did you think of the album when it came out?
Yeah, I was pleased with what I did, what the band did, and the way it was going. Yeah, there's some good tracks on that. Yeah, that was when I started to realise we're going somewhere, because at first I was still at the post office. I'd do my bit, fuck off to work, get there for 5:30 in the morning, do my shift, drop my car, and then drive back to Driftfield again to do the other bit, hang around for a bit. So I was still at the post office then. Because I thought we weren't going anywhere. It's just a bit of, well, this is not going to last long, you know what I mean? We'll do a first album, see how it goes, you know. So, I used to go home and come back. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that was tiring.
We've skipped past the first album with John Cale. What was it like working with John Cale?
He was very professional. Proper. He didn't understand us at all. Satsumas, we used to sit there with Satsumas, and did Paul tell you that? Satsumas, sit there with his oranges, peeling them, feet up, thinking. He came into the recording studio where I was jamming, because he wanted to hear us live, and he just kept looking at what we were doing. And to be honest, I didn't know who he was, really. He was a nice bloke, yeah. I mean, was the Captain Beefheart, somebody used to do Captain Beefheart, working with him as well? Or was that somewhere else?
Well, he was... Velvet Underground was his big thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, Velvet Underground, but there's another guy there as well, the engineer. He was like, really... Yeah, it was first proper, we had to go to London, in a recording studio, and high-rise, yeah, brilliant, do it. And we stayed in Swiss Cottage. Oh, that was a laugh and a half. Yeah, that's when I got introduced to Class A's. Never again.
Oh.
Jesus.
Oh dear. Yeah. What happened?
Not telling you. I can't work on this shit. I'll stick with what I know.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Were the drugs just all over the place? And was it kind of like expected that everyone would take lots of drugs?
Well, it wasn't expected. It was just there. It was just everywhere we went, it was there. Sniff a dog that you find out and just bring it back, you know. It was just, it had to be, right, we need this, we need this. And you just try things and you see what helps. But there's that addiction thing. I mean, I know what I can work on. And I'm sure Arsh knew what he can work on, Paul. But it's inspirational, yeah, because it does help you write. I shouldn't say that. Kids, don't do drugs. I wouldn't endorse it, but I do like a biscuit now and again.
So Paul Oakenfold and Pills and Thrills and going to LA. Tell me about that.
Yeah. How long have you got? Well, that was brilliant because we had our own apartments, our own cars. I was in Capricorn Records, and just going in that building was like awe-inspiring because you could see all the artists on the wall. Just, yeah, it was. But there again, we did things separately. So it'd be like, right, I used to do my bit in the morning when I'm fresh, when there's nobody about, while they're all in bed. I don't want any interference. Don't mind for me because it used to get me back up. When you're in the studio, and Paul was the same, you like to have nobody around, just go in and do your bit. And the next thing, I turn around, and it's a card out of The Cult. Ian Ashbury was behind. Bloody, and people walking in and out, well, what's going on here then?
Was it exciting when you bumped into people like that, and they were taking an interest in you? Yeah.
You're walking down Holloway Boulevard, and there'd be some filming going on, a load of people dressed up as aliens. I thought, this is a bit weird. And filming, they're all filming. There's a film set everywhere. Something always going on in Hollywood Boulevard. It was like crazy. Yeah. Oh, it was brilliant. Yeah, really enjoyed that. And after that, I knew I was going somewhere after that album. Because after it had been remixed again, that's when I thought, right, we're going somewhere now. I'll get married. Coming back off the train, listening to it, the demo that we did, and I thought, this is brilliant. Yeah, we're going somewhere. Right, brilliant. Little did I know.
Yeah. So how did you meet Jane?
Hacienda.
Oh, really? And literally, yeah. You asked her to marry you when you realised that Pills and Thrills was a success.
Oh, we've been courting. It wasn't just like, we've been courting before that. Yeah, I went to Corbière's. Met Gaz in there, high on drugs, don't know, done a load of speed whiskey on the bus. Got there and I was dead happy, you know. Right, it's Christmas, finished now. And I saw Jane at the bar with a mate and just started chatting to mate up. And then chatting Jane up, bought them drinks and they buggered off then. That was it. And the chat line was, I'm in a band, you know. Well, we didn't have phones, so the only way I could... I managed to get a phone number on a matchbox. And that matchbox could have gone anywhere that night. So just pure chance. Yeah. And I met her in the hacienda afterwards. And I had my anorak in my pocket, which you do because you have to walk back from Manchester all down the East Lancs in the middle of the road off your head because there's no cars then. It was very quiet. Yeah. Because taxis, you couldn't get them. Few and far between. Anyway, that's besides the point.
So you asked her to marry you when you'd heard Pills and Thrills. You thought, right, I can get her.
Yeah, yeah. She just come in with a shopping. Dead romantic. Oh, God. I got the ring out in the kitchen. I mean, I could have... If somebody told me that's not what you're supposed to do, you're supposed to do it romantically at a restaurant, I would have done it, but no. Kitchen.
But you're still together all these years later. How many years ago? How long have you been together now?
Well, you get less for murder. 35 years? No, well, we got married in 91. Work that out. Is it 30? Oh, we better remember this. I'll get in trouble.
32 years this year.
32 years, yeah.
Brilliant. You've talked about your most memorable gigs. Do you remember any gigs that were just dreadful and that you just wanted to crawl under a stone?
All of them. No, the early days, yeah. Oh, there was one. We tried to do a Beatles number and it went really bad. Yeah, it just didn't work. Probably because we were on mushroom juice at the time. And then it all kicked off. Some bright sparks. I did have some mushroom juice before a gig. Right. So the next thing, right, all PD has to do is press the button on his keyboard to activate the song, because it's all linked up. Could he do it? No, he's pissing about. Next thing, I got fucking frustrated, walked up. And I don't know what happened, but my fist left my shoulder and hit him right in the mouth. He fell backwards, hit the monitor behind him and kicked the keyboard and the song started. I thought, oh, brilliant, right. Got ready to play. Next thing, he's frothing at the mouth, comes over, smacked me in the head. Next thing, the crowd are going ape shit. They had to put all the smoke on to hide it. And that's how we made it in the morning, because all the Daily Star, the Sun, it was all local band from Manchester, Fight on Stage. Brilliant, we made the press, we got what we wanted, that was it. That's how you do it. That was, yeah. But, so it was bad, but it was good, if you know what I mean.
Brilliant. Are you still in touch with PD?
Yeah.
I know Paul was really fond of him and talked a lot about him, you know. And he's...
Yeah, we all love PD, he was a laugh.
Let's talk about you've talked a lot about the positive side of drugs and how it helped things, and clearly it did.
Well, for inspiration, yeah, not for anything else. And it's a moderation thing going on here as well.
Yeah, but then with Paul, things went dark eventually, didn't they, with his drug use?
Yeah.
When he got into heroin.
Well, it did for, yeah, that's when I couldn't deal with that. It was really low point for me because it depressed me, because I could see we got a number one album and then it was, how'd you come back from that? You're aiming for the rest of the world, and basically we're just a British band. So you want the next big hit. And that was when I could see, I was very depressed. Sean was on methadone, dropped the bottle at the airport to go to Barbados to do Yes Please. Got to there and it was just chaos. And I thought, oh fuck, this is it. I better find a job. So we go to Barbados, which was like the capital of the Caribbean, but we didn't know that. But you say you've been promoted from heroin to crack. Brilliant. And it just wasn't working.
How was your experience in Barbados of recording the Chris and Tina? Did you feel okay with what you were doing and the songs that eventually came out of that?
Well, I knew we had the songs. The songs were okay. It was just the atmosphere that you never knew what was happening next.
Right.
Bez would be off gallivanting, killing himself. Sean would be doing the same. Hospital bills. people not getting paid, going on strike, and this was because we were running out of money. It was bleeding. The factory was bleeding. Nobody else was putting a record out.
How was Paul during that time?
He was, yeah, he had issues as well. He was still playing, but it was a case of Chris and Tina change. It was just getting a bit, like, weird. Because we was there for a month and a bit, and we didn't get the vocals down, and I just couldn't see it. The build you up and the chop you down, but we chopped ourselves down, you know.
So then soon after that, there's the legendary meeting where everything came crashing down. Tell me about that.
Part of London Record. I think it was EMI, and it was a Lifeline. And we were rehearsing in Ancoats. And Sean hadn't turned up. Then eventually Sean did turn up, had a word. Whatever they said, I don't know. But the next thing, he said, I'm off for Kentucky, and that was the end of it. And the next thing, it was like me and Paul said, right. So, you know, grabbed our equipment, because we know we're not going to see that again. It was a smash and grab with your own equipment, because if you left it there, it won't be there the next day. It'd be sold. And it was just a mutual understanding. That was the last offer. Yeah. It would have kept us together, but it was time to just clean out, just sort your head out and get back together.
How did you feel after that? Like, when the band had imploded and that was it?
Well, it wasn't good, was it? Because me personally, I just bought an house, got kids on the way, and interest rates were 30%. So you moan now, but in them days it was... And so I had to find a job, so I was fucked. It was either bankruptcy or too late to start a band, because it takes years to start a band again. It's not an income thing that comes straight in. So, yeah, I just drank too much. But there was one good thing that came out of that, saw my kids grow up.
Right, okay. So how did you survive during those years that you weren't getting any money from the band? Was that when you started teaching?
No, White Lightning. Cider.
What's that?
Only 8 to 9p a bottle for 2 litres, yeah. That's what I mean. Yeah. Weed, light lightning, anything. No, I got a job, got back into the system, became an entrepreneur selling crap to people that didn't need it.
How did it feel that the kind of going from being playing to 100,000 people to getting a normal job? That must have been very difficult to cope with.
Well, it was a plane crash, wasn't it? Back down, it's just... But I had to sort of face my fear and do it anyway. I had to earn money. Oh, it's either that or go bankrupt and just...
Yeah.
You've got to do what you've got to do for your family. And I did that for 15 years then.
How many years was it between the bands completely splitting up and you getting back? Because it was like 16 years, wasn't it, before you were back with the original lineup, wasn't it?
17 years, 6 hours and 43 minutes.
So that in that period, there were a lot of weird incarnations of the Monday, some better...
Yeah, I tried to not listen, get involved. I just put me... I stopped playing. I didn't play for 17 years. I put my guitars in the loft. I just forgot about music. I didn't do anything. I just hated it. It left a really bad taste in my mouth and I didn't want to get involved. So I didn't listen... I didn't care, then I got into teaching after. I went for an audition after not playing for 17 years. I went for an audition. These are classical trained musicians, not played in 17 years. I applied for the council to get involved with MAPAS, and I was like, did Blackbird from the Beatles. But they liked my enthusiasm. Not saying the song was great, but the enthusiasm was there. And they just let me loose to teach on kids because they knew who I was, you see. I got turned down at first. Application got turned down. No, we're full up. Then somebody saw my name. I thought, hold on, he's out on the Mondays. Get him in. You know what I mean? So they got me in and I was like, And then since then, I've learned a hell of a lot more than I did do, because all the peers, the peers that work there, they're top musicians, and I couldn't even play Black in Black by AC/DC. That was like, ooh, don't want to do that. Because we were thrown straight into writing music, straight away, being creative. And if you do all that stuff, you're not going to be creative, are you? So that's what we did. We just went through it out of naiveness. And the less you know, the better it is, I think.
Right. So how did you feel when you weren't included the first time they got back together again? And that must have been really horrible for you, knowing that they were playing and you weren't involved.
Oh, fuming. Yeah. You used to have plasticine dummies on the wall and used to throw knives at it.
Yeah, that was very... And then when... later on, that there was another incarnation. I think only Sean and Gaz were there from the original.
Yeah, I don't know what happened, because I stopped listening. If I heard it on the radio, I turn it off. I didn't want to know what they were doing, what they were up to. I know Paul got involved. It was Paul, Sean, and then Paul wasn't involved, then it was Sean and Gaz, and Bert, and it was just like... But, you know, this is the best version. I always was with Paul.
So... tell me how you felt. I don't know how you found out about it, but we found out that in 2012 that the band were reforming with the original lineup when somebody sent me a link to an article that was in The Sun. Like, nobody had approached Paul, but it had been announced in The Sun that the band were getting back together with the original lineup, but nobody had actually asked Paul, at least. How did you find out about that?
Right, I found out it was a very wintry day and I was a designated driver. The only one time a year I do this, and my son was playing in Farnworth somewhere, down some Oakcliff Lane, somewhere down Stonecliff, in a band, went to see his friend's band, and I was driving. They were all pissed in the back there, took my mate and his girlfriend and my son, and they went there. And my daughter was working at the Marriott, waitering to get through uni, and Sean was in there talking to his new manager, and my daughter, who's flamboyant out there, just went, oh, I think you know me dad. So, oh, we're just talking about that. And then I get a phone call, dad, I'm Sean Ryder's here, he wants your number. I went, it's up to you, darling. So she gave me a number, and the next thing, I've got the manager ringing me the next day talking like, well, I could do with the money. So I must have said yes, but what my concern was, I've not listened to any of the songs for 17 years, and it wasn't written down, so how am I going to do it? And I've not played guitar. Well, I've started playing guitar for teaching. That's the only thing that kept me going. Otherwise, I would be screwed. And that's how I know how Pete Deal feels. Because if you don't keep up, do it, you're just going to forget and it's just going to be a loss. But somewhere, it was in the back of my quarter, you know. And it all came, took me a while, but you get there. I've wrote it all down now, so I can't forget.
So how did you feel that day when you got the phone call from that manager?
Shit in it. Fucking shit in it.
But was it?
Because it was like.
Was it exciting?
Yeah, it was exciting, but I was shitting it because I'd not seen the guys for 17 years. And when we first met after 17 years in the town, it was a bit bizarre. Because when we all got on, it was nice to meet everybody, but I was still a bit like, oof. Are we all over it now? Are we all clean? Can we all, you know, actually do this? You know, and they were, yeah. So, yeah, it's been great. Since rejoining, I've had to really enjoy it now. In the early days, I hated every minute of it because it was just stressful. It was just one thing after another.
In the early days of the reformation, you mean, or the early...
No, the early... when we rise to fame, because it was just chaotic. It was madness all the time. It was two steps forward, three steps back... interviews, it was just so busy and it was crazy, you know.
And how is it different now?
Well, it's a lot more professional. It's a lot more better organised. You know, at least for one day I can be a diva.
What's Sean like now compared to how he was before?
Yeah, no, he's fine, really. Don't talk to him that much, you know. We only see each other on stage on a professional basis because he turns up like 5 minutes to go. So there's not much you can talk about in that time. Yeah, but he's fine, yeah.
Yeah. Describe your relationship with Paul over the years and how it's been.
Well, Paul was like the driving force. He had the strength of a character to deal with what he had to deal with because he's gone through a lot. And I, because there was that 17-year gap, I'd only see him when we was actually touring. And we just talk like old men talk about family, friends, things that are going on, memories. Yeah, top geezer, had a right laugh. Yeah, miss him. Yeah, terrible. Yeah, but no, he's a top geezer. Always reliable, and he was like a driving force, really. You know, getting in the early days was a driving force, getting it all together, making sure, getting rehearsal times. Where I was a bit more lazy, I couldn't be bothered. But Paul was straight on it, yeah. We went to do a Q Awards in London. I think me and Paul represented the Mondays, and we went down there. I think it was a Q Awards, and he had this MG midget car, but he said, we can't stop, because if I stop, I don't know if I'll get it started again. So I was dying for a piss for 3 hours, the most painful experience I've ever encountered. The most funniest thing was, when we went to the Panama jungle, Paul and Sean having an argument in the Panama, what do you call the rivers, in the river, they're doing a video shoot, arguing about who's got the fattest belly. Thought that was going to kick off.
Were they trying to say that their belly was fatter or that the other ones was?
No, sure, they were slagging each other. You're fatter than me. No, you're fatter than me. If I was going to 50 cuts, look at the camera crew would just go, what the fuck? It's all right, it happens all the time. It was dead funny, though. And then, oh, another time, I was at an airport and Paul was behind me. Next thing, he gets arrested. Oh. Yeah, but armed police arrested him or something or other.
Where were you?
I was in front of him. I thought, what the hell's going on here? Well, apparently, we're just checking security. They put a gun in his bag when he wasn't looking just to check the security.
No.
And he was, yeah. And he was, it's always Paul. He must look the type.
Which airport was this?
Oh, I don't know. When was doing a tour in the States? I can't remember. Gaz will tell you. He knows everything about that. Probably fill you in a bit better, but that was funny. Yeah.
Wow. How did Paul's feuding with Sean affect you? Like, you've talked about it a little bit, but how did it affect the band as such? Do you think it helped the band? Do you think it gave the band some extra magic? Or do you think it ultimately led to the destruction of it?
Yeah, the latter one. Yeah, no, it was always, you didn't know what you were going to get, what day, if they was talking or if there was something going on. It just got worse. I think it was either petty over money or something or other, or getting involved with the politics of the band and stuff like that. It didn't help, let's put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's like, I mean, you talk about the Gallagher brothers, nothing on Sean and Paul.
Did it make you uncomfortable to be working with them? Like, when you were doing gigs and things were kicking off on stage, or were you able to just detach from that?
I'd just become immune to it. Oh, there you go. Somebody's throwing a tambourine at somebody. Oh, there you go. They're fighting on stage again. Oh, there you go. The CS gas has gone off. You get kicked out of the hotel. I just got used to it. I was just like, first thing you have to do, me and Paul says, right, anything, just grab your equipment and leg it, which we did.
Yeah, yeah.
No, just brothers in it.
The horrible day when he died. Can you talk about what happened that day?
I can. Yeah. You sure you want this? Yeah. We got a gig. The day before we did a rehearsal, Paul Kerr turned up with his daughter, Amelia. He didn't look too good. What he was saying, he'd had a COVID jab and he thinks it's affected his hearing. So he couldn't play, which was very unusual because you normally he tried, but he just couldn't play. So it was obviously there was a problem there, and so I just come back off my holidays, so I just come straight off the flight. I was still jaded and hadn't got a clue what was going on, thrown into rehearsal straight away because we had a gig the next day. So last thing I said to Paul was, see how you are in the morning, and if you're not in improvement, go and see a doctor. Well, the next thing, I get a phone call in the morning. Mila rang me up and said, she sounded very stressed and emotional. And I said to James, what is it, Paul? You might need to go to the hospital. So when I got there, he was just on the couch, just pale. He'd been dead for a while. But Amelia was convinced that there was still a chance, you know. So I dragged him on the floor and tried to do CPR on him, which wasn't nice because, you know. And Jane tried, but Jane started crying. Then the paramedics came in and they just looked and said, no, he's been gone for a while, you know. But it's not the thing I wanted to see, really.
That must have been hugely traumatic for you. And
it's just, you know. And then it got a bit worse.
Yeah, it got worse when Sean tried to persuade the band that they needed to go ahead and do the gig that night.
No, he's on the floor, he's dead, he's on the floor, we're not doing a gig, you know. Fans are no fans, it's not happening.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The funeral was good. He would have been proud of that, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he would have been, yeah. Everybody came. It was brilliant, yeah. Everybody that knew him. And they all said great words about him, yeah.
One of the saddest things is that he would have been blown away by all the things everybody said, and it's a shame that people don't hear these things while they're still alive, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. It was filled the church up. And everybody turned up, which was really nice. So, yeah, just very sad. We'll be missed immensely.
What's it like now doing shows with a standing replacement? Like, how does the guy says that you and him struggle particularly with the journeys to and from the gigs? Where that's where you really kind of miss him.
Yeah, well, with me, Gaz and Paul was like, you know. We knew what we had to do, kept it together, driving force, just, and we practiced. And Paul was very particular, if it wasn't right, we have to do it again. And so, yeah, it's going to be difficult, but it's not the same, it'll never be the same, but, you know, show's got to go on, hasn't it?
Yeah. In the podcast, he talks about, like, obviously there's always talk about doing another album and Sean always wanted to do it himself and not involve the rest of you. What's your feeling on that?
Well, singers are allowed to do what they want, but don't use the Happy Mondays now.
So what are your what are your hopes for the future with the band now?
Just to, don't know really, it'd be nice to put an album up, do something different, but I'm quite content just to keep doing the same old stuff, you know. It's just a day out to piss up with the lads, do some music, get a bit of money. Don't know, I mean, what can you do? I mean, 60-year-old bloke, well I am anyway, so, you know, take every day as it comes nowadays.
Is there anything that you want to say? Is there anything we've forgotten? Are there any funny stories you've not managed to talk about? Is there anything...
Well, if I get another Stella, I could be here all night. You know, you need to go out and a piss up with me. I'll tell you all sorts. Just comes to me. It's something that's not written down. It's just the back of my mind. I've not planned it all out. There's a lot of things. I mean, you're talking 30 years of being in that the business of early days to now. And the early days are a bit sort of jaded. Yeah, you've got the cat in the back there.
Yeah.
She knows what she wants. No. Don't know. Ask me a question. Tell you no lies.
Oh, yes. We never talked about celebrity encounters. Like, any good stories about celebrities you've met along the way?
Going back to going to London in the MG with Paul, but I think there's Ronnie Scott's meeting Paul McCartney and Bill Wyman, getting their autographs. I had a long conversation with Paul McCartney. Can't remember a fucking thing I said. Who else? Oh, just loads, man. I'm not going to sit here and name drop, for Christ's sake.
Didn't you meet Bowie when you were in LA?
He walked past me. Didn't say, fucking little bloke walked past me. Fucked. Jane loves him. I'm fucking honest. I wasn't awake. I wasn't, you know... And I just miss everything because I was more focused on getting the gig sorted. Is my guitar tuned up? What we're doing there? Didn't bother about celebrities. It wasn't my forte. You know what I mean? Just I had a job to do, and that was it. So I wasn't star spotting. But yeah, there was all sorts of people. I know that Eddie Grant used to take the chair away outside his mother's when he was doing Barbados. I used to sit there to get away from the shit, and that was the only solace I had. I used to sit right outside in the studio, and then outside was a house that his mum lived in, but there was a nice little chair there, and I used to sit there, and there was a window behind me, so she could see me sat there reading a book. That went. Bench went. Went there the next day, gone. No, and I don't know. I'd have to think, but there's all sorts. Just, yeah, Terry, he was a character, he was a red. There's all sorts of people, yeah.
Terry who?
Fun Boy Free.
Oh, Terry Hall, I know, and he just died, didn't he?
Yeah, he was a great character, yeah.
Was lovely, wasn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, there's all sorts of people. Peter Gabriel went to his gaff. I mean, you know, just characters, aren't they? Just, yeah.
Do you feel like you're... Because, you know, you're a celebrity in many people's worlds. Do you feel like that?
No. No, I can go out, nobody knows who I am, it's brilliant. Yeah. Actually, no, having said that, right, I was bringing my dog in the other day, right, and a bloke at the end of the street says, I believe a Happy Mondays lives down here. No, don't know, mate. Fuck that, I don't want anybody knowing where I live. Jesus, bad enough now.
Yeah. That's funny. Do you never get recognised in the street? Paul did occasionally.
Well, if they do, they don't say anything, and I don't, you know. I think it's because they expect you younger. You see, when you're younger on things, and when you see an old bloke with a beard, bald, fat belly, they think, oh. He's let himself go.
You look good. No, I mean, you don't look... You look a little bit older, but you don't look much older than back in the day.
No, but... Well, oh, thank you. Better tell the wife that, then. Slagging each other off. Oh, what are you having now? I'm having a chocolate. Oh, you put weight on. Yeah, I know. Don't care.
All right. Well, thank you. It's been brilliant. You've been really, really good. Some really good laughs in there, which is what...
Oh, good.
That's all we have for you this week. Mark, oh, he's a really genuinely lovely guy. and like the other musicians, has never really been given the credit that he deserved for his contribution to the Monday sound. If you'd like to become a patron of the show and have first dibs on getting on the Zoom calls that we're going to have with some of our guests, go to patreon.com/thePaulRiderTapes to join up, and we would love to have you. We're big arming it up again this week with the track Scar 3000 from the album Radiator. We're going to be back again next week, same time, same place, with another episode. And as usual, if you would like to watch the video version of this podcast, it is going to be premiering on our YouTube channel next Sunday, which is the 12th of May at 8 p.m. UK time. So please come and join us, and I, as usual, be live in the chat. Please do me a favour and hit the subscribe button, so you'll then be the first to hear about new content that we're dropping. Check out the website at paulrider.tv for links to the socials and the shop, and have a really brilliant week, everybody. Big thanks to all of you for being here, and special thanks to the lovely Mark Day for talking to us, and thanks, of course, as usual, to the man himself for inspiring all of this, to the legend that is the late great Paul Anthony Ryder.